Today is the day the Lord has made. I'm sorry, Caleb, he's missing step.
I'm a dinosaur. I can't use the fancy stuff in my ears and notifies, you know. Hello, hello. Are we okay? Okay. Today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I don't know about you, but I'm very enthusiastic for being here this morning. How about you?
Yes.
Well, let's try this. I'm going to say, who's enthusiastic? And you'll say, I'm enthusiastic. And then a little pause and say, oh, boy, am I enthusiastic. So you can do that? Sure. Okay. Who's enthusiastic? Wow, you're good. You're really good. Thank you. Thank you very much. When I was out at the front door before the service began, and a new fellow walked in. He said, I'm new to Unity today. My name is Ken. And he said, are you the minister? And I said, well, no, our ministers are on vacation right now. They're out of town speaking elsewhere. But you know something? We have a lot of ministers here. As you're seeing this morning up in the platform here, we have Sally, and we have Jim, and we have Al, and we have Alan, and we have Linda, and we have Julie, and Steve, and George, and Dan, and Will. Did I miss somebody here?
Jeff.
And so, yes, in Unity, we kind of go along with what Pierre de Chardin said. There's the priesthood in all believers. We all have an opportunity to be up here. We all can do it. We all can do it. Well, I got to tell you a little story about the pulpit this morning. In 1976, when we built a new church, we had a beautiful custom-made pulpit made. And the minister we had at that time was Scott Sherman, and he was way over 6 feet tall. It was made for him. It was made for him. And then along came Reverend David McClure. And that beautiful man was a bit shorter. And so we cut the pulpit down. That beautiful cover down. Well, then, a few years later, we had Reverend Jim Rosemurgy come in, and he is even shorter than David McClure. And so we cut it down again. And then, wouldn't you know it, the next minister was that big, beautiful, tall man named Reverend David MacArthur. Well, we're 6 feet tall again. So here we are. Now we have a transparent pulpit, and so everybody can see over and under and around, so wherever the height is. I had some sage advice that I heard from a brother talking about a brother who was next to speak about their father giving a eulogy at the father's memorial service. And the brother said, now, don't try to be funny or academic. Just be yourself. You got that? Well, that's me. I'm not very funny. I'm not very academic, but I love to talk. I love to talk here. I'm so happy to be here. I tell you, I came about my joy for speaking on Sunday mornings, or any time, as a matter of fact. And it was all kind of coming back from my grandfather. My grandfather came from Norway with three little preschool kids and his wife, and they settled in an earthbound home in southeastern South Dakota. And imagine, they had seven more kids in one room. Think about that for a moment. Well, it was a Norwegian community, and there's a lot of people that wanted to go to church, but there's no minister. And so my grandfather, who was a really big Bible scholar, he loved to read the Bible, and so he self-ordained himself. He self-ordained, and he said, I can do that. I can do that. And so he rode horseback and horse and buggy to three different little congregations throughout southeast South Dakota on Sunday morning, rain, sunshine, whatever. And according to my father, who was a little bit older then, probably about 10 years older then, and my dad recalls so well sitting on those hard wooden benches with a pot-belly stove in the winter and a non-working fan in the summer, hearing my grandfather filled with the Spirit and Bible thumping up here. And so my dad, when he first knew I was going to be speaking here a few years ago, he said, now, Royce, remember that just because you're in the pulpit does not give you license to preach. Good advice. He remembered his grandfather. He remembered his father who really preached. Well, I'll try to keep my talk brief today, no matter how long it takes. Remember Charlie Brown saying, I love humanity. It's people I can't stand. Well, I'll tell you, Jim Rosemary, your beautiful young minister back in the 80s, he had this idea of a hug-a-planet. And looking back, it had some troubled times then, as always, and we have now we have concerns in the White House and across the congressional aisles and in London and Tehran and Beirut and, not Beirut, but Beijing and Pyongyang. And so I think it's time to break out our hug-a-planet again. And so what Jim did, I'm going to suggest today, we're going to pass around our hug-a-planet, and give it a nice little hug, and maybe put your hand on a part of the world that you particularly want to be blessing today. So Alan is going to pass it around, and so this is it. We'll give it a good one. So, thank you, Alan. So pass it around to each person to person, and the guy in the back row there, please keep it. I want to take it home again. I might use it again one day. Who knows? So don't take it home because it's mine. I love it. I love it. Jim Rosemary based this whole idea on John 16:33. He said, "These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye may have tribulation, but be of good cheer. Be of good cheer." As some of you may recall, I was a columnist for the Spokesman Review for 31 years. I had 7 columns a week and 3 on Sundays, and in the day, I was kind of something of a celebrity in Spokane, I guess you might say, because you couldn't escape my face or my name for a long, long time, for decades. But the day came, I went to Israel and Egypt and the Greek islands and Rome and Scandinavia with Jim Rosemary, our wonderful Unity minister back in the 80s, and I was really inspired to travel. It really, really caught hold of me. I really wanted to travel and talk about travel and write about travel. So I decided to take an early retirement from the Spokesman Review and open a travel agency with my beautiful wife, Annette. Well, a year later, the airline industry chose not to give commissions to travel agents anymore. And so about 60% of our income was gone. And so we were at Auntie's Bookstore at that time, with our office, and I was out there contemplating and kind of wondering what I'm going to do, what we're going to do. I was out in the bookstalls there, and I was looking at the book, and I felt someone looking at me. Someone's looking at me, and all of a sudden I felt someone tapping on my shoulder. And I turned around, and here was this nice, sweet little old lady, very politely saying, "Didn't you used to be somebody?" Whoa. Now that was a stopper. That was a real stopper, you know. It brought to mind Bob Hope, the wonderful comedian that we had for so many decades that was so dearly beloved. He talked about the fleeting fame that we can have from time to time. And he said, "You know, yesterday I was out there drinking champagne in a fancy restaurant, and here today I'm stomping barefooted in a vat of grapes." That's life, isn't it, sometimes, you know? But you can't give up. You got to have habit of happiness. There you go, Jan. Yes, you got to have faith that something better will come. And so I took that advice to heart, but helped me out a whole lot was my wonderful, supportive, dear wife, Annette. And she bought me this picture you're going to see now on screen. Oh. And she hung it next to my mirror in my bathroom. And so every morning I take a peek at that and say, "Hey, I'm still here, you know. I am somebody. I am somebody, you know." Well, move ahead here a little bit. Anyway, I left the newspaper with a good salary and 5 weeks paid vacation and a medical plan, a dental plan, and a pension plan. And that was pretty sobering, you know. That was pretty sobering to left it all behind and realize, whoa, that's all gone. Now we just got us to make a living and to cover all the things as well. But that little lady and my wife changed things for me. I decided that, hey, I'm still here. It can go on. And so we did. We've had a really nice, successful 25 years since then of consulting people on travel, not selling airline tickets. And it's worked out very well for us. I also think of that wonderful troubadour we have in Unity from time to time coming around the country. His name is Charlie Thweet. Remember Charlie Thweet, anybody? Yes. Well, he had this one. He sings songs and he wrote songs and he had this wonderful song. He said, "Life on the planet is fun. You don't have to be anyone because you already are." Isn't that good advice? Isn't that good advice? Well, during the last 25 years especially, I have come to the realization that life is just a series of adjustments. You notice that also? Life is just a series of adjustments. We have to adjust all the time. Well, James Dillard Freeman, our wonderful Unity poet laureate, who died a few years ago, who spoke at our church, what a blessed man and what a great message he had to give and what great books he wrote. He was a real guiding light for me in many ways, like I said before, and he wrote the book, Happiness Can Be a Habit. And that remains a primary text for me in our Unity teachings. He says, the kingdom of God is within you, and no matter what might befall you personally or what the world's unwanted conundrums seem to bring to us, have a happy heart. That doesn't mean that stuff won't happen. Oh boy, stuff happens. But it won't come to... Just give me a second here. That doesn't mean that stuff won't come to you and confound us, but we'll meet it with a happy heart. I believe that a happy heart is the prerequisite for feeling fully alive, being fully alive. Over the 50 years I've been in Unity, 50 years this year, 50 years in this church. I've watched and I've listened and I've read and I've thought and I've had wonderful ministers and teachers and guest speakers and people in our congregation who I meet on Sundays and classes during the week who have given me lots and lots to work with and to be and to stay fully alive. I've also been keenly aware of the people in my life outside the church that have entertained and educated me and given me insights into life. We had, I love this statement, glory of man is God fully alive. The glory of man is fully alive. Jesus said, I have come that you may have life and may have it in all its fullness. Well, Annette and I have been taking groups to Europe over the years, and we had a wonderful little lady named Elizabeth, and she was little. She was about 90 pounds and maybe 4 feet 10 or something, and she was brilliant, brilliant. She's a medical librarian in Spokane and loved her dearly. She'd been on several tours with us. And we were on the island of Capri in Italy, and we were ready to go on a chairlift to the top of the island. And the chairlifts at that time were really old and dilapidated. They're much better now, but at that time they were really like 100-year-old chairlifts, you know. And here's little Elizabeth sitting in the chair like this, holding on to that. And somebody in the group behind her, he called out, he said, Elizabeth, are you sure you want to do this? And Elizabeth, that darling lady, she called back. She said, honey, I came to see and do it all. I lived in Brown's Addition for quite some time back in the 60s and 70s, and we had a man in our apartment building named Bill. And Bill was 92 years old at the time, and the previous year he had been driving the car that his wife died in. And he had moved into this apartment building in Brown's Addition from the Palouse country, the wheat farmer, and he was riddled with arthritis, and he also had a lot of feelings about what had happened the year before. And every morning, he would lay in bed, and really hurting. He had arthritis from his nose to his toes. The arthritis was so bad. And he said, it's hard to get out of bed. It's hard to shuffle off. But every day, he shuffled off the bed, and he walked around Brown's Addition's Coeur d'Alene Park. He walked around the entire park, and it took him all day long to do it. And he always came back and reported that, I know every girl in a bikini, I know every squirrel, every baby, every kid on a playground. And he said, you know, Royce, if I don't get out of bed, I'm going to die in bed. And I'm not going to die in bed. Guess where Bill died? In Coeur d'Alene Park. 6 years later. And walking the park was really good for him, It got his bones moving, his muscles moving, and he got to see a lot of happy people in the park, and also helped him to resolve himself with the death of his wife. And so I suggest that get still and get out of bed and walk around the park. It served him well. There was a basketball player a few years ago in Tri-Cities, as a matter of fact, and he was really a star player, just a star basketball player. He could jump, he could shoot, he was just on fire all the time. And a sports reporter came to him to interview him and said, my goodness, you just are incredible. What does it feel like to have the roar of the crowd after you, cheering you on, and what does it feel like making those baskets over and over again? And he said, well, you know, I don't really hear the roar of the crowd, and I just know I love to play basketball. Just love to play basketball. That's good to have a passion and compassion for something and somebody. I got a funny little story here that Eric Butterworth wrote about. He said there was a miser. There's a miser that lived out in the country, and he had a treasure. It had treasure buried in the earth around his farmhouse there. And every Sunday, he'd go out and he'd dig up his treasure and look at it. Oh, man, look at all that I have here. This is just, I'm a wealthy man, I'm a wealthy man. And one day, a robber was watching him out there digging up his treasure and stole his treasure. And a man came out of hour later to see his treasure, and it was all gone. He's frantic. He says, my treasure, it's all gone. Someone has taken my treasure. Oh, what will I do? Well, one of the neighbors came over and looked at him. He said, well, what did you do with this treasure? He said, well, I looked at it every day. And he says, well, just look in the hole again. It'll do you as much good. Yeah. Wealth unused is useless. Wealth is used is not used as useless. Like I said, my dad lived 106 and 48 days, and they called him Mr. What's Happening in the Veterans Hospital. He was kind of a celebrity because he was so old, and he was so lucid. And they started calling him Mr. What's Happening because he'd come out of his bed into the wheelchair, and a little skinny guy, he was going around his wheelchair, and he wouldn't want to talk about himself. That was boring to him. He didn't want to talk about himself. He wanted to know what's happening. What's happening in the world today? What's going on now? What do I need to know? He is a voracious reader. He had insatiable curiosity. I saw him reading books. My dad, believe it or not, my dad could be reading a book or a magazine and listening to a basketball game on television or radio and carrying on a conversation. He did. He'd play bridge till 2 o'clock in the morning. This is in his 90s, you know. He's 90s doing that. Another thing, my dad, he was absolutely non-judgmental. He was non-judgmental. He said it's so important to not see things as black and white, but to see them, to evaluate them. And the big thing is getting the value out of the word evaluate. Fred Bauer, in his wonderful little book, Rainy Days and Sundays, I think I mentioned it before, I'm kind of behind you, but he said how naive it is to believe that the world is made up of people with black hats and white hats. How naive it is, doubly naive it is, to believe that your hat is all white. Pretty good, huh? I like what Martin Luther King said. It's a good pairing with what Fred Powers said. He said, forgiveness is not an occasional act. It's a permanent attitude. Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It's a permanent attitude. Stuff happens. People happen. People can annoy us. Things can happen that really turn us upside down. My dad, my wonderful dad again, I got to tell you that in his 90s and early 100s, he woke up every morning, and he would take an inventory of his body. He starts his toes. Well, that one's doing pretty well. Oh, that one, I don't know. It doesn't move very well, you know. And the big toe, oh boy, that's really in trouble. But my left foot, that's all good, you know. And then he'd work up to his ankles and his calves and his thighs and his waist and everything. And he'd twist his head back and forth. And he would touch his nose. And then he'd wiggle his ears. And he'd say, oh, I'm good to go today. I'm good to go. At the funeral home the morning after he died, the mortician came up to us and said, I've never seen a happier corpse. And I'll tell you, a lot had to do with the fact that my wonderful wife, Annette, every night at the Veterans Hospital, she sang to him before he went to sleep, she sang, you are my sunshine. And he literally died with a smile on his face. He adored Annette. I'll tell you, when she came into my life, I think it added another 15, 20 years to his life because he adored her. Pardon?
How was he when he passed?
106 and 48 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was lucid to the very last moment. He was absolutely lucid to the very last moment. He died a happy man. Well, as some of you know, we've had a lot of calamities in our life, Annette and I, the last couple of years. On Christmas Eve, 1917, we were ready to go out the door to come to church to sing in the choir for Christmas Eve, and our house pipes burst, and we were flooded. We were really flooded. Living room, dining room, kitchen, everything was flooded. And it was a cold night, and we phoned the city to come out and turn off. We couldn't find out where the shutoff was. We couldn't find out where it was. And so the city came out about 10 o'clock that night, and they came out, and they couldn't find the shutoff either. And they finally got it, and we couldn't leave the house because we couldn't leave the house the way it was. And so these guys, they worked so hard, freezing cold, out in the yard. They found this cutoff way out by the curb of the cul-de-sac, and they got it turned off. And so, and that night, ended up moving downtown for 8 months into a hotel. 8 months we were downtown waiting for them to repair our home. And you can say that's pretty bad, but you know, it wasn't. During those 8 months, well, first I got to tell you that two days after we moved out of the house and then moving the furniture out, I managed to slam the car door on my head. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool. And I had a concussion. I was bleeding like crazy. And that hurt. That really hurt pretty bad, you know. Well, then 2 days later at the hotel, I was tripping down the staircase thinking that I was still 18 instead of 80. And I tripped and fell, and I fell right into a pipe coming out of the wall, and I cracked my ribs. So here I am with temporal arteritis, and I got cracked ribs, and I can't stand noise, and I can't stand much light. And so Annette had to put up with me for the next several months, living in the dark mostly, and not having anything very loud. But you know something? During that time, we had the most incredible maids and staff of the hotel. Just extraordinary. We had a whole group of women from the Polynesian Islands, the Marshall Islands. And they were so sweet and so dear, and they pampered us like we were their grandparents. It was just extraordinary what they did. And they brought us things, and on Annette's birthday, they came to our door, and they sang happy birthday. They brought their children along. They sang happy birthday, first in English, and then in Polynesian. Let me tell you, it's beautiful in Polynesian. It's just beautiful. It really touches deeply. Well, then, unbeknownst to us, a bunch of anonymous people that came to the hotel found out that we were there for 8 months, and we'll never know who they are, but you won't believe it. We were given three very expensive coupons to three high-end restaurants in Spokane. We were given tickets to the Opera House to see two Broadway plays. And one of the staff that worked in the kitchen there, she was a gourmet cook, and she brought us, on my birthday, she brought us a whole entire dinner that lasted the whole week. She asked me, what would you like to have? And I'm a 1950s guy, and I said, I like meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and green beans, and a cross green salad. And she said, oh, I can do that. And she said, what kind of cake would you like? And I said, well, you know, I got to tell you that I'd like to have pie for my birthday. I'd like to have cherry pie for my birthday. I can do that. And she came down, and she made this beautiful, big, best meatloaf ever tasted. And I make good meatloaf, too, as so is Annette. But this is the best ever meatloaf. And everything was just delicious. And at the end, she brought in 8 cherry tarts that were homemade. Wonderful crust and wonderful berries inside and everything, you know. And so those 8 months, I can't complain. I can't complain. So we came home, and this year, as you may recall, Annette was rehearsing for Bernard on Broadway, and in rehearsal time, she fell off the stage, and she broke her leg. Annette's a singer. She loves to sing, and she's a good singer. And she was so looking forward to being in the show. And when she's being hauled away in the ambulance, she's really almost yelling in pain, but she calls out, I'll still be in the show. And 2 weeks later, she was up here in a wheelchair with a cast on, and she's saying, you remember that? Okay. And she's saying, Broadway, baby. And boy, did she nail it. Yeah. I was really proud of her. Really, really proud of her. When we believe that, when we believe we are doing our very best to move on and something or someone seems to be blocking us, we must believe that delays are beneficial and keep on keeping on, believing that something better is ahead. This or something better. Shirley Keller, who was our wonderful spirit-led administrator for the church for many, many years, she had a great statement, which I've kept in my mind for all these years too, and it's that there are no winners and losers, only winners and learners. Pretty good advice, huh? Winners and learners. We're not ever a failure unless we choose to be a failure. And you know, there are a lot of, you can have suffering, but you know, suffering is not the worst thing that can happen to you. The worst thing that can happen to you is have a life that's meaningless. You have a meaningless life. So I suggest that you find something every day The most ordinary day to find something that you feel good about somebody else or something or about yourself. And at the end of the day, you can say, I did this. This happened today. This was a good day. This is a good day. You got to do it. And just think about that, because every day, if you choose to do it, it can be something good that day, and it's going to get you through sleep that night. I got this thing that I don't count sheep at night, and after I say the usual Lord's Prayer, I start counting all the people in my life who I'm thankful for. I have 72 people that I alternate back and forth all the time, and I add to it once in a while, and some people have died even, but I bless them in my life. And it's a great way to go to sleep, to be thankful for every person in your life. It's a great, great activity. It works for me anyway, so maybe it'll work for you. Eric Butterworth, again, who I like so much to quote and to live by, he says, don't live life in a tightly sealed bottle. Mix with the world, and you'll know the immensity and wonder and the joy of living. He also said, God is in you like the wave is in the ocean. God is in you like the wave is in the ocean. I love that. Jesus said in John 14:12, he said, he that believeth on me, the works that I shall do, he shall do also. And greater works than these will I do. Well, just think about it. I'm going to name about five or six things that have happened since Jesus. We have a printing press. We have telegraph. We have moving pictures. We have reattachments of eyes and fingers and replacements of hearts and livers and kidneys. And even learn how to raise the dead. I was at a church retreat many years ago, and I at Priest Lake and having a wonderful dinner at the restaurant out there, and I got a fishbone caught in my throat, and I I couldn't breathe, I couldn't do anything, and one of the people on our board, Betty Ehler, came rushing over, and she gave me the Heimlich maneuver, you know, she saved my life, so that was invented, you know, long after Jesus was speaking and doing. And then I want to tell you about, as we sit here right now, there are thousands of scientists and inventors and people who really want to improve our lives that are sitting right now thinking and doing and producing and making things that are going to change the world right this very minute. And I'm going to be an example. I don't know how many of you might be tuned into Netflix. It's worth the money, let me tell you, because of documentaries. And there's a documentary right now on Bill Gates, and it's called Inside Bill's Brain. Well, part of this film is just, the whole film is extraordinary, telling you the good things that are being done in the world, and particularly, of course, by Bill and Melinda Gates. And one of the best pictures, I'll never forget this in my whole life, because of the shortage of drinkable water in Africa, he has done everything possible to make water potable. And believe it or not, you can see it in the film, he has, with all his scientists and people around him, he's funded to having human poop made into water. Oh. Sounds kind of gross, doesn't it? And he's drinking it, too. He's drinking it, see? Because Africa is really, really needing water that's drinkable. And so he did it. What a miracle. You know, Jesus turned water into wine, and and Bill Gates turned poop into water. Pretty good, huh? I can just hear God saying, "You are my child in whom I am well pleased. You are my child in whom I am well pleased." I picked up a little sign in the church in Unity of Hawaii when we were visiting Donna and David a few years ago, and I love this little thing. It says, if you want to have a dream come true, wake up. Wake up. Wake up. I'm talking too long here, I think, so I better wind it up here. I got about four more pages to go here, but I'll do it up here. You know, sometimes some things in life are wonderful at the time. They're really great. That invention, that product, that person, that whatever, that was really good for you at that time in life, but things change, don't they? Things change from time to time. If you make anyone or anything the object of your existence, you're really in trouble because things change. Things change. And I think about plastics. When I was in fifth grade, our teacher told us to write down all the things that plastic is made out of. The list was long and long. And the guy that got, the girl or guy that got the most, you know, they got the most number of plastics that were good for us. They got a gold star or something. Just think what's happened now. We're doing everything possible to get rid of plastic. And so that's a good lesson for life, too, you know, that just because it was good then doesn't mean it's good now. We got to move on. I really like what Jane Fonda said. I want to live a long life and die young. I said that twice now. I want to live a long life and die young. There's a sign downtown, I think it's in the corner of 3rd and in Bernard right now, and it's on the northwest corner, and it says, if not now, when? Isn't that a great sign, though? And I think it's permanent. That's good, you know. It's not now, when? Let's get to it. We had a wonderful singers, Omen and Shanti, that came to church for many times over the years. That we used to live back in the 70s. And they had a song, Let Me Remember, I Am One with God. Peace to my brother, peace to all mankind. I like that planted. My great neighbor across the street is 81 years old also, and she does yoga, and she plays and sings and reads, and she's a really altogether happy lady who really makes the most of every single day. She looks terrific. She's 81, she looks like about 60. She has this great, great attitude for life, you know, taking care of yourself. And she came up with, for her and I, and she said, think this, she says, I'm still having fun at 81. We're still having fun at 81, so keep that in mind. Well, I tell you, I want to live a long and happy life and die young, too. And I hope I'll keep reading and writing and singing in the choir here at church. Good choir. Come to the program. It's going to be great. And I love to cook, and I love to laugh, and I love to run and walk and go to movies and meet with friends. Cook. I love to cook. I love to garden. I love to plant flowers. I love to be in the mud. I love it. And I hope I'll never forget Gene Kelly splashing in the puddles and singing with the rain. Remember that? His umbrella? This morning, I came to church this morning, and it was pouring down rain at 8 o'clock this morning. It was pouring down rain, and I had an umbrella. I thought, oh, this is perfect. This is perfect, you know. Singing in the rain. I came with a wetsuit, but I didn't care, you know. Singing in the rain. I hope I'll never forget that. You know, here at Unity, we are really, really good at being puddle jumpers and puddle splashers. You're in good company here with all of us here. So I suggest that you go out when you leave the service today with a happy heart, fully alive, do good, and have fun. Who's enthusiastic?
I'm enthusiastic.
Oh, boy!
Thank you.
Thank you, Royce. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know that there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are and wherever you are in your journey of transformation, you are welcome here today. If there's anybody here for the first time and you feel brave enough to raise your